Does your antiperspirant keep you dry all day? Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray goes on instantly dry for a cleaner feel and offers 48 hours sweat and odor protection. Let me repeat that. 48 hours of sweat and odor protection. Use it and don't even think about it. Also, Dove Men Dry Spray contains Dove's unique one-quarter moisturizing cream that helps protect your skin. Try Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray. Goes on dry, clean feel all day.
And now, go!
This is the Rich Eisen Show, live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Thank goodness we're at the end of this hour that I'm not now going to turn the schedule and play the win-loss game for the Jets.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Because it'd be 17-0. Right?
Earlier on the show, from the HBO drama Barry, Emmy Award-winning actor Henry Winkler. Coming up, NFL Network reporter Tom Pelissero, Basketball Hall of Famer Grant Hill. Plus, legendary comedian Tom Dreesen. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Oh my gosh, we just had maybe one of the greatest hours in the history of this show, and Henry Winkler stopped by and told amazing stories from Happy Days and amazing stories from Barry and his entire career, Night Shift, a terrific celebrity, true or false. If you missed it, youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show. It will all be on there. And I've already instructed one of the best in the business who handles our digital component of this program, as well as so much that you see on the screen on NBC Sports on Peacock, especially that terrific celebrity true or false segment he produced. Sean Mitchell, I already told him, remove the beeps from all that. Henry Winkler just dropped an F-bomb here, and I'm proud to say that it was on the Rich Eisen Show. And it was in reference to Jump the Shark. Oh, my gosh. So there's
John,
that.
John Hine just caught Winkler shrapnel.
He just hit John with the Hine, didn't he?
Yeah.
He really did.
Okay.
We also left out the part of him talking about the acting coach trying to sell his art to people without
a
job.
Yeah, that's an a-hole.
That's an a-hole.
He dropped that too. So youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show. Great job, Smitch and Hoskins and Jordan Sherrow and our entire team here on the Rich Eisen Show that puts stuff on the screen for you on NBC Sports on Peacock. We say hello to our terrestrial radio audience and our terrestrial our Sirius XM audience on channel 85 as well, and those listening on Odyssey. Grant Hill's going to join us in the middle of this hour. He's got a new book. There it is in my hand. It's called Game, an autobiography. So he's called Game, or he's got game. I mean, I do like books with titles that you can read into. So Grant Hill's going to join us. Game 4 of the NBA Finals is tonight. Lots to talk about with the Basketball Hall of Famer. Hour number 3, another legend from way back in the day all the way to this day, the legendary comedian Tom Dreesen is going to be on this program. He's going to be here in hour number 3. But joining us right now on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line, let's talk a little bit of football with organized team activities mandatory style happening this week, next week as well, as stars of the game are appearing in front of microphones for the first time in a long time. So there's lots to talk about with my colleague from the NFL Media Group, Tom Pelissero, back here in the Rich Eisen Show. How are you doing, Tom?
Speaking of jumping the shark, that was a great lead-in to me. We had the Fonz last hour. He regaled us with stories from Happy Days. Now here's a guy who tweets about Hunter Renfrow extensions. I'll take what I can get. I'll deliver here, but that is a really hard act.
Well, also, Tom, you have similar hair. To the Fonz. Let's put it that way.
True.
Okay, you've got that. You've got it working. I don't know if you're riding a motorcycle that Steve McQueen wants you. I don't know.
Tom?
You got a leather jacket, Tom? You got one of those?
That's been brought up with my wife before, and she always makes that face like, "Yeah, just don't even try it."
Yeah, don't even try.
You can't pull that off.
So, Tom, let's then figuratively stay in your lane. Let's jump right into it here. The question I get from so many people, I attempted to ask it of Les Snead, and I'm now going to ask it to you because I know crossed T's and dotted I's and things of that nature on contracts. How are the Rams able to do what they are doing by paying significantly and enriching with market value contracts, in other cases above market value contracts, for their stars and keep it all under the cap? Tom.
Rich, I would start with the fundamentals of the salary cap are that every dollar you spend hits the cap eventually. It is always a one-to-one ratio. It is a matter of how you account for that money, and there are certainly mechanisms and always have been to push your cash dollars now into future cap dollars. In other words, a very simple way to explain it, If you give somebody a $20 million signing bonus, that doesn't count $20 million on this year's cap. That counts over a five-year contract, four. So you're able to count those into future years. So it's always possible to spend more cash than the cap space that you have at any given moment. But there is no such thing as cap magic, again, because those dollars you spend are going to come back eventually. We've seen it with teams like the Saints, who people talk about, well, they just keep rolling it and rolling it and rolling it. Well, this season on their cap, they're counting Drew Brees for $11.5 million. They're counting Teron Armstead for $12.8 million. That's a couple of pretty good players that you could be able to sign, but you can't because you devoted those cash dollars years ago, and now those players are no longer on your team, so the cap counts now. In terms of the Rams, I do find it entertaining that people are shocked that they could find a way to retain the offensive and defensive players of the year. Those weren't free, and those weren't, you know, contracts that they just conceptualized in the past week here. Go back to March. They traded away Robert Woods to gain cap space. They did not opt to up their offer one more time for Von Miller, and he leaves for Buffalo. That's also driven by keeping your cap healthy. If there were no salary cap, Odell Beckham Jr. would probably already have signed for the Rams. And just the other day, when they re-signed Cooper Kupp, they cut the guy who had the interception in the NFC Championship game. And those are all cap-related decisions. What you're trying to do always in the NFL is balance what you're trying to accomplish now with what you're trying to accomplish in the future, which is why if you go into the details on the Cooper Kupp contract, they didn't even lower his salary as much as they could have. They could have saved an extra $8 million, but they wanted to keep both the Kupp and Aaron Donald cap numbers this year relatively flat because that's how they had it budgeted. They've got a window right now. They're coming off a Super Bowl win. They're going to do what it takes to be able to retain their core players, but they did let some other guys walk out of the building. The only way that you get yourself out of that cycle of restructuring contracts, pushing those cap dollars in the future, at some point, is to not spend cash. The teams that have mountains of cap space year after year, at some point, just didn't spend money. That's how they have it. They had to tank out. That's not what teams do when they're in a position to contend. That's why the Saints, for years, pushed it the way they did, and that's why the Rams are approaching their cap decisions and their contract decisions the way they are right now.
Well, when I asked this question of Les Snead the other day, Tom, the day after he gave Donald the contract that he gave him, and again, I've been at this almost 20 years with the NFL. I don't remember a contract given to somebody that doesn't add years, just adds dollars. But again, he's a unicorn. And then the day before Kupp signed is when he was on this program. So I asked him that, and he mentioned the player Greg Gaines, who was a fourth-round pick in 2019, and how significant a contribution he gives to the team. And he says, like, that's the types of guys that we draft. We don't F all the picks. You know, that's how we do that. So we got those guys, and so we can pay the other guys. But he kept on mentioning over and over again the window we have, doing it in the window that we have. And I asked him about the window that he has. And, of course, he's not going to mention on the air, well, it's, you know, the credit card bill is coming due this year. You might know that. What is the window you think the Rams have based on the way that they are correctly and appropriately and smartly building a team to win and keep winning right now?
Well, they've got a veteran quarterback in Matthew Stafford, who they also just extended.
Right.
If you look at Aaron Donald's contract details, it sure looks like this is a, okay, Aaron, please give us two more years. That's what we need. That's how they seem to be approaching it, is within a two-year window. But again, it's not as if the window then slams shut.
Right.
Maybe you don't have Aaron Donald anymore, but you've still got really good players in Cooper Kupp. We've seen quarterbacks play for a long, long time, and you wonder if Matthew Stafford continues to improve as he did over the course of the last season and played his best down the stretch and into the playoffs. He may decide that he's willing to keep playing. You have to consider Sean McVay as a part of this, too. There is no salary cap for coaches, so ultimately he's going to end up getting paid more money than probably any coach in NFL history, with the exception of possibly Bill Belichick. It's a matter of how long you can keep that entire group together. There's something sexy about the Rams right now, too, where you know you do at times get players to maybe take a little bit less. I don't know what Bobby Wagner might have been offered elsewhere, you know, but he lands there for a reason. Allen Robinson had another strong offer. He had like four teams involved. He ends up choosing the Rams because he saw an opportunity to go there and produce and make more money for himself in the big picture. That's always kind of the product of winning. You know, but in terms of their window, yeah, they're going for it over the next couple of years here. But again, to go back to the way that they even structured the Cup and the Donald deals, they are striking that balance between now and in the future. With regard to the draft picks, you know, everybody always says the reason that a lot of GMs are reluctant to trade away, particularly their first round picks, their high picks, is because that's your young, cost controlled workforce. But when you opt to do what the Rams have done and trade those picks away to get a Jalen Ramsey or to get a Matthew Stafford, remember, that's also dollars you're not spending on those rookies that maybe you can take with, hey, our first-round pick this year, it would have been not that far off from the money we're paying Bobby Wagner. We'll pay Bobby Wagner right now and let somebody else develop those players while we're trying to go and win another Super Bowl.
Tom Pelissero, my colleague from the NFL Network, NFL Media Group here on the Rich Eisen Show. Let's turn the page to next week, Browns mandatory camp. So Deshaun Watson will, of course, be there. He's been bestowed that record-setting enriching contract. But now there's 24 civil lawsuits against him, and the New York Times report could not have been any uglier in terms of what his past behavior has been. And so the question is what is the latest on the league maneuvering to potentially keep him off the field in time for next week? Is that a possibility? What are you hearing right now, Tom?
From a process standpoint, Rich, the way that works is Lisa Friel and the investigative team do all their research, their interviews, the evidence gathering to the extent that they can, because, of course, the league doesn't have subpoena power. They're not the courts. And then turn over that information. In the past, it would have been to Roger Goodell. Now, under the 2020 CBA, which really has not applied in a case like this, Article 46 bestowed the power of personal conduct discipline upon a jointly appointed arbitrator and not on Roger Goodell for the initial disciplinary decision. So now Friel will turn over that information, again, just from a process perspective, this is for all cases, to an arbitrator who would make a disciplinary decision barring some type of settlement that potentially could be reached in advance of that.
But that's for the season, and that's for the season, Tom. I'm talking about there's a commissioner's exempt list that has been used on players before matters like the one that you're discussing have been solved.
Right. The exempt list, there's two ways you can apply the exempt list. One is if you have a felony charge or a crime of violence that you are charged with. In this case, Deshaun Watson has not been criminally charged. The second version is if the evidence leads the commissioner to believe that such an act or such a violation of the personal conduct policy may have occurred. So it would be unwise, to say the least, for me to speculate on what, if any, evidence the league has collected that might push them to use the commissioner's exempt list on Deshaun Watson. Let's remember that they did not use it last year, despite whatever speculation occurred. That was a Houston Texans decision to wait it out they hoped it actually came through, have the criminal cases resolved, and then be able to get maximum compensation. But you still have the 24 civil cases that are persisting here. In the past, when you look at all the players who have been placed on the commissioner's exempt list, whether that's Adrian Peterson, Greg Hardy, Josh Brown, Reuben Foster, DeAndre Baker, Quentin Dunbar, Cody Latimer, they've all been charged. The only exception in a higher profile case that jumps out at me was Kareem Hunt, who of course was on video that was widely circulated punching and kicking a woman, which made that a fairly, again, to go to the second criteria, that's a fairly obvious, a violation of personal conduct policy may have occurred. There's not a precedent for using the exempt list with civil matters, but there's also not a precedent for one of your highest profile players being accused by 24 different women in civil lawsuits, plus additional women in the criminal cases that did not ultimately yield a charge, as well as other women who have spoken to various media outlets. There's no precedent for any of this. And that's one of the difficult pieces of this when it comes to an exempt list decision or an eventual disciplinary decision. We've not seen, you know, anything close to, everyone keeps bringing up the Trevor Bauer comparison to Major League Baseball. There's never been a two-year that type of personal conduct suspension. But again, this is a rare case. And because the arbitrator, not the commissioner, is now under the CBA responsible for making that initial disciplinary decision, you know, people I've talked to who are very familiar with the inner workings of these processes say there is an element of the unknown of exactly where that person is going to land in terms of discipline, if any, for Deshaun Watson.
Well, Baker Mayfield, last one before for you before I let you go. Baker Mayfield has been already excused for next week. Makes complete sense. But again, I don't understand why he's still on the roster. Is he still there as Watson suspension insurance? Could that be possible? I don't think there's any way to put the Mayfield genie back in the bottle in Cleveland, but I'm not in the front office with any thoughts or have a window into their thinking. I wonder if you do. What do you have for me on that?
I would say until the day that Baker Mayfield is not a member of the Browns, any scenario is possible. But Baker Mayfield has made it abundantly clear to the Browns since before even they had made the trade for Deshaun Watson that he does not want to be in Cleveland, that he felt like he was misled, to say the least, by members of the organization with regard to his future. He does not intend to play there again. And if the Browns are thinking about this realistically, I would fairly tell you that they probably are not under any illusions of how easy it would be to mend that fence. Now, if you got to the point that Deshaun Watson were suspended for a season or more, there is a case to be made, at least from an intellectual standpoint, that Baker Mayfield's best chance to revive his career and his earning power is to play 1 year with the Cleveland Browns as opposed to 1 year with the Carolina Panthers or the Seattle Seahawks or whatever team he potentially could go to, because the Browns are pretty talented. They got a couple of really good running backs. They traded for Amari Cooper. They've got playmakers on the defensive side of the ball. They're a team that's really built to win. But, you know, those are, I would say, at this point, still long shot types of possibilities. It's just there's so many moving pieces right now between the Deshaun Watson situation and the Baker Mayfield situation. Rich, I would tell you this. I'm not big into making predictions. If I'm predicting right now, I would certainly not anticipate Baker Mayfield is still on the roster come the start of training camp. But again, as long as he is still on the roster, which he is as of this moment on June 10th, you just can't rule anything out.
Tom, thanks for the time. Greatly appreciate it. Let's connect during the summer, if not before the end of this month. I've got lots more questions. Thanks for the time.
You got it, Rich. Anytime.
That's Tom Pelissero. At Tom Pelissero on Twitter. A must follow. You must follow. I follow him. You should as well. Let's take a break so we're remotely on time for our next guest, Grant Hill, calling and talk about his new autobiography called Game, and the Basketball Hall of Famer on tonight's Game 4 and what he thinks has gone on through the first three games between the Warriors and Celtics when we come back. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, Terrestrial Radio Network, along with Peacock, Sirius XM 85, and Odyssey. Thrilled to have back here on the show Basketball Hall of Famer and Hall of Fame individual and a part owner of the Atlanta Hawks as well. He's got a good piece of a major franchise in the association, which helped him get into the Hall of Fame, along with his incredible career at Duke. And I love his broadcasting, along with Nance and the great Bill Raftery on the Turner Family of Networks and CBS for college basketball. Game, an autobiography where all books are sold. Grant Hill back here on the Rich Eisen Show. How you doing, Grant?
Hey, Rich, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. Thanks for those kind words,
true,
too, in your intro.
These are all facts. These are all facts. I would have given them, you know, just so you could ask me to give you a testimonial on the back of your book. But you went up the flow chart, to be very honest with you. The people that you got here on the back, Magic, Coach K, Adam Silver. I get it. I get it, Grant. I totally get it, you know?
Hey, Rich, I'll tell you, my next game, my next book, More Game, I'll get a blurb from you.
Are you sure? That. Are you sure? Because, you know, can you get it from a Michigan guy, Grant? Is that possible? Is that a possibility?
I mean, we can all coexist. You know, I think so.
Okay. Well, because you don't have a problem with Michigan as much as Michigan has a problem with Duke. Right, Grant?
No, look, Michigan, and they talk about it in the book, Michigan's one of the five schools that were on my list. I was a big Sean Higgins fan and actually made a visit to University of Michigan the weekend after they won the Final Four.
So you met with Steve Fisher? Is that who was on, or in your initial contact might have been with Bill Frieder? pretty much back in that day?
Yeah, there was another gentleman who was recruiting me, but they won.
Was it the guy with was it the guy with the cake box, Grant?
No. There you
okay.
go.
All right.
But I went up there the weekend after, and I was a junior in high school.
Yes.
And I was when I made my visit to Duke later that year. I guess right at the beginning of my senior year. The following weekend, I was supposed to go up to Michigan, and that was the weekend that Michigan played Notre Dame, and Rocket Ismail had a coming out party, and so. My dad, you know, wanted me to wait one more week before I made a decision so he could go and be on the sidelines with Bo at the Michigan game. And I think I broke his heart by saying, no, I'm ready to commit to Duke right now.
Oh, man. So you know who was on the 50-yard line in the press box covering that game is his first day on the Michigan football beat for the school newspaper, the Michigan Daily. That would be me on that day, Grant.
Oh, wow.
Yes. We're both old is basically what I'm saying, Grant. You know
that is true.
But you are aging much more gracefully than I am. Congrats on this book. Why do it, Grant? What led you to putting it all between two covers for you?
Great question, Rich. You know, for me, it started really with the Hall of Fame enshrinement back in 2018. The lead up to that moment, you know, you're naturally going to be reflective, and you're going to look back, look in the rearview mirror, and sort of just take in the totality of your career. And so, you know, I think that ultimately led to, you know, kind of right before COVID, this idea, okay, let's go forward with this and let's do it. And so that's what sort of lit the spark, if you will. And, you know, it was a really interesting, really exciting exercise of going through and kind of going back, looking at your life, looking at it from a different lens, trying to live in certain moments and recall certain things certainly was quite the process.
Okay, Grant Hill, Basketball Hall of Famer, his book Game, an autobiography here on the Rich Eisen Show. So was getting a piece of an NBA team always the goal when you were going through your playing career? Because we're already hearing LeBron talk about maybe getting a team in Vegas once it's all said and done, and he certainly is building the capital for such a thing right now, to say the least. Was that always a goal for you while you were playing, Grant?
Yeah, you know, my dad tried unsuccessfully back in the mid-'80s. He was with a group to try to buy the Patriots, went through it with the Washington Bullets, then now the Wizards. And then in the late 90s, when the Browns moved to Baltimore and became the Baltimore Ravens, the NFL awarded a franchise. And so he had a group that he was a part of that tried to win that, and of course, they lost out. So I say all that to say that, like, the idea of ownership, you know, was at least the idea was planted. The seed was planted when I was in college, and just the possibility. And so when I got to Detroit, you know, I signed a big contract, and you know, I looked at Mr. Davidson, who was a great man and was the owner of the Pistons. Mm-hmm. Like, man, this man pays me this contract, you know. And so he and I became friends, and really just learned a lot from him. Picked his brain, tried to understand why he was successful, and had a really, really good friendship with him. But you know, even then, I was thinking, okay, one day I'd like to own a team. And, you know, thankfully, the opportunity presented itself 2 years after I retired. I retired in 2013, and then, you know, the Hawks came up for sale. And I talk about in the book sort of the process and engaging with Tony Ressler and what that was like. And even going back to the Clippers, I was a part of, you know, Tony and I, along with another gentleman, tried unsuccessfully to buy the Clippers in 2014. So, you know, get a little bit into that and what that process was like and how crazy and wild and exciting it all was.
And I played a soundbite from Trae Young the other day, Grant, about his response to hearing the F word from Knicks fans during the playoffs and how he likes to shut him up. And I assume you heard what Klay Thompson had to say about the Celtics fans when it was brought up to him. It's not like he had an agenda when he got out there for his post-game press conference after Game 3. And what you were like on the road and hearing it from the crowd, Grant, your two cents on that subject that's out there in the NBA Finals conversation right now.
Well, you know, there's a code of conduct that is expected and required. And, you know, look, when I played in the 90s, you know, crowd said whatever and players said things to the crowd, you know, and I'm part to blame. You know, at times, you know, I said some things that I'm not very proud of. But, huh. You know, I think now with you know, technology and cell phones and, you know, everybody's being watched, we expect and demand that the players, you know, not react and respond a certain way and are fined and penalized if and when they do. You know, look, I think you can boo. I think you can, you know, all of that. But when you start, you know, going over the board, I think that's, you know, we should, you know, hold ourselves as fans to the same standard that we demand from players. And so, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to penalize and hold an entire building accountable. But, you know, I mean, look, it is what it is. And, you know, I think, you know, the bottom line is the fans don't win the games. It's the players and what they do on the court. And if players are too busy and too worried about that, then, you know, the fans have won.
Yeah.
And, so you gotta tune it out and go out, focus, and concentrate on trying to get the job done.
What are your thoughts prior to Game 4, what you've seen through the first games of these NBA Finals and how you think it's going to play out, Grant Hill?
Rich, you know, it's interesting. I don't know. I mean, I think Golden State has shown that they can bounce back. They have the institutional knowledge. I mean, they lost in the second round to Memphis after losing. They were on the road. They lost by 50 points and still came back and not only won the next game, I think won the series. You know, Klay played well. He shot well. Steph's been really good. They have to get off to a better start. At times, Boston has struggled at home throughout the playoffs. But Boston has looked really good, particularly at home in Game 3. I don't know who wins, but I will say this. Whoever wins Game 4 is going to win the series.
Really? So you're laying that much on the line on Friday night?
Yeah, I think if Golden State wins, they tie it up. I think they go back and, you know, they win Game 5 and they're in pole position. And I think, you know, conversely, if Boston wins up 3-1, they've done well on the road throughout the playoffs. They've closed out, you know, some games on the road or at least had some must-win games on the road in these playoffs. And so I think they'll have, you know, three games to win one. And so I think this is a big game. I think whoever wins Game 4, kind of bold to put it out there, but I think whoever wins Game 4 wins the series.
Grant Hill, Basketball Hall of Famer, his book, Game, an Autobiography. We'll talk a little bit more about that before we send him on his Friday right here on the Rich Eisen Show. What do you think's going through LeBron's mind right now with the roster currently the way it is? Darvin Ham, former Piston, and now his new head coach, and LeBron turning 38 this December. What do you think's going through the GOAT's mind right now, Grant Hill?
Well, you know, I think for him, obviously, it's difficult to sit at home and not play. And, you know, he hasn't, you know, been in that situation maybe only two other times, I think, throughout his career where he's not in the postseason. I think his first year and then I think back in, I think it was 2019, the Lakers didn't make the playoffs. You know, I'm mindful that the last time it happened, they went and won the championship. And so I think, first of all, just getting that rest and letting his body heal up and, you know, particularly as he's getting older, I think that'll really charge him up, you know, and he'll be ready to go and tackle this season. I think overall health is going to be important. You know, we haven't seen the best of Anthony Davis really since the bubble. And I didn't think he was great last, you know, the year before last, and obviously limped into the postseason. And then this last season, he wasn't right at all. So the extra rest, you know, should really help in his preparation. And then, you know, I anticipate them making a few roster changes, maybe some other shooters they can, you know, have around those guys to complement them. But I like Darvin Ham. He was an assistant coach with the Hawks, so we had him in Atlanta with Coach Bud. You know, he's smart. He's credible. He's no nonsense. And I think guys respect him because he played. And so I'm excited to see. I know LeBron is right now, you know, super motivated. And, you know, this is the end is near, you know. And so this could be his last, you know, opportunity to really go for it and contend and, you know, attempt to try to get that fifth ring. So it should be an exciting season. I know LeBron is doing everything possible to get himself prepared for him, hopefully a title run.
All right, Grant Hill, I'm looking through the index of your new autobiography game, okay? And it's time for story time. And I'm just seeing some of the names here. One of them is Staubach, Roger. Your dad, Calvin, played for the Cowboys. And it is true, Staubach was the one who suggested to your dad to name you Grant, right? If I'm not mistaken. He has taken credit for that. That is a true story, right?
It is.
Okay.
It is.
All right.
I was baby boy Hill for 3 days. Clearly, my parents were expecting a girl. Needless to say, I was not a girl. So, you know, my dad, yes. you know, I think he, you know, just the excitement of everything. And, you know, my dad takes a minute to make a decision. And so, but Staubach suggested Grant, which is my paternal grandmother's maiden name. And it sounds better than Baby Boy Hill. Although in this day and age, I might have been able to market Baby Boy Hill.
Yes! You could have had a different career, no question about that. So what's your favorite? What's your first football memory, Grant? What do you got?
You know, I remember, my dad left the Cowboys and went to the World Football League back in the 70s.
Okay.
And I was probably around three. Of course, the league folded because it was paying players too much. But I remember, like, being in the arena, in the stadium and watching the games and watching really everything but the game. I might have been like 2 or 3 years old. But when I really started to kind of like take it all in was when he came, went to the Redskins after leaving Hawaii. And, you know, 4 or 5 years of age, that was when, you know, going to the practice facility and, you know, Joe Theismann and Charlie Taylor and guys like that. And, you know, so I was, you know, kind of growing up in the locker room, was always around those guys and, you know, go in the locker room, you know, after games and just taking in the spectacle of the NFL back at that time. And so I don't remember the Dallas years, but certainly a little bit of Hawaii and a lot in Washington. And then, of course, Cleveland, where he finished his career off.
Love it. Another name, Jordan, Michael. What's your favorite story involving him, Grant?
Jordan, Michael.
Yes, sir. Yes, I'm reading from the index. I read from left to right.
Yeah, no, I'm trying. I've had a lot of interactions, obviously, even before I got to the NBA. I think really my first, you know, time really meeting Michael Jordan was when he was playing on the Dream Team, and I was on the college select team. And the first day we played, I was matched up against him. And you know, he's calling me Dookie, and I'm trying to deny him the ball. And he's like, man, I can get the ball whenever I want. And so that was a memorable experience. And we beat him. And we the college players, beat the Olympic team in the first day of scrimmages. Now, they came back and beat us the next 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. We couldn't get the ball over half court. But to be around Michael, to hang out with him, he was really nice and generous to all of us. And it was just a memorable experience and a lot of fun.
He didn't happen to reach out to you after a certain Cameron Indoor regular season finale and Final Four game that you you might have called, Grant. Did he reach out to you in any way?
No, he didn't reach out, but mm-hmm. I saw him in Cleveland at the NBA 75 ceremony.
Yes, yes.
And as they were coming off and in the back in the hallway, he came up to me, and Duke, we had just beat them in Carolina and blew them out. And, you know, we blew them out maybe a week before.
Yes.
So I was talking all types of trash.
You were.
And I was in his face, and I was like, oh, man, like, you know, it's, I mean, you know, I'm giving it to him. And he's like, man, you weren't talking trash when we were good. I was like, yes, I was. I was talking trash because when you guys were good, we were good too. You know, and so we were going back and forth in the hallway, and so that rivalry, although there's an incredible respect, a mutual respect, we definitely like to talk trash.
Well, some friendly advice, I would try to avoid Michael in the coming days, if not months, if not years, after the last several games between the two of your schools, Grant. You know that, right?
Yeah. You know, I mean,
I'd avoid him.
That was tough. That was the home game was one thing, the last home game for Coach K. But, you know, the Final Four, like, that was, you know, to lose to them like that, you know, I don't think I'll ever be able to live that down.
And you were at the mic. Your professionalism was fantastic, Grant. Big time.
Yeah, I was faking it. Yes, I was definitely doing that.
Big time.
I've known Hubert before,
sure,
either one of us were in college, and I was happy, you know, I was happy for him. And look, I'll say this, in all seriousness, college basketball is at its best, in my opinion, when Duke and North Carolina are really good.
Oh yeah.
And when you replace a legend like Roy Williams, there's always concern. But Hubert, having the season he had, getting to the final championship game, almost coming close to winning it, you know, Carolina is going to be relevant for quite some time. And now we're trying to do the same as Coach K leaves and John Shire's coming in. And but I'm hopeful that'll happen. And I love the rivalry. And I love it more when we beat them, which I intend to do next year.
Well, I guess one last one for you in the remaining time I have with you, Grant Hill, from your index. Raftery, Bill. Give me your best one, man. Give me your best Raft story, please. You got one? You must.
Well, I mean, most of the stories are around, you know, last call or at the bar or something along those lines. I mean, I can't believe that, you know, one, that he can, you know, hang out and partake like he does. But the next day, he is like, I mean, he gets up and the next day he's full of energy. And I'm dragging. And, you know, I'm half his age or almost half his age. And, like, we're getting up and we're going to practice at 8 a.m. And he's just buzzing around like he had 12 hours of sleep. And it's just like he just, I mean, and literally, like, he just goes and goes and goes. And you drink with him. Mm. And you're like, you know, you're sitting there. You're like, you know, my glass was just, it was almost empty, but now it's full. And so, you know, you take a few sips and you drink, and then it's full again. And you're thinking to yourself, have I drank that much where I can't determine? But he's constantly, I mean, he's constantly reloading, and he's doing it so slick and so sly. But he's so much fun. And I just have to rest up for 11 months to get ready for March.
Well, he and Nance are terrific. You guys are all great together. All right, I got one last one for you. Patrick, comma Dan, when I got to SportsCenter, one of the best SportsCenter commercials that had already been on the air was you in the lobby. And when I first walked into the lobby of ESPN as a young 26-year-old kid, I'm like, this is the place where Grant Hill played the piano. And yeah. What's the backstory behind this one, Grant? You got
so it's
one?
An interesting backstory.
Please.
So I just finished my first year in the NBA, and I remember my agents were saying, look, you know, ESPN wants you to go to Bristol to tape this commercial. And you got to understand, like, I was a part of the very first batch of ESPN commercials.
Yeah, I remember.
Which, you know, are legendary. And you've been in them, and obviously everyone's aware of them. And, you know, it's like when they were asked, it was like, commercial? Like, it didn't make any sense. They're like, yeah, ESPN wants to do a commercial. I'm like, you know, nowadays, any athlete or any individual that's asked to do it, you know what it is, and you're on it, like, because you know they're good, they're creative, they're funny, and they'll be all splattered all over the network for, you know, for quite some time. So I almost turned it down. Like I said, commercial? Like, it didn't make any sense. And so literally, I was there. I think it was Dan Patrick and Craig Kilborn. I think Kilborn was there. And I might have been like, we might have, it might have been 5 minutes that we recorded that. I came in, I had my jersey on, we sat down, and I didn't even play anything. They just acted like I played.
Right.
And we did it, we taped it maybe two times, and that was it. And I was back to Hartford and flew out. I mean, literally, it was like I might have been on campus for all of 15 minutes.
No kidding, because it's just great because, you know, Dan was down, bad show, and then you played like, you know, Charge. You know, dun, 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 and you just kind of got, you know, a little bit more peppy and then put some money in your jar. Brilliant. Just so funny. And they added that later. Fun.
Classic.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm going to tweet that out. I just found it.
Please go ahead. It's brilliant. Hey, Grant, thanks for the time. Congrats on the book. Let's do it again. Certainly since, you know, at least I'd like an index mention the next time you have a book. So let's create some memories, the two of us, over the next several years.
Let's do it. Thanks. I'm all for it.
Look for my call, Grant. Thanks again. Congrats on the book, and you be well.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Anytime. Grant Hill, Game and Autobiography, where all books are sold. All right, when we come back right here on the Rich Eisen Show, TJ's big ass grab bag, including a little reference to our first hour guest, the great Henry Winkler. Don't go anywhere. Back with that in a moment. All right, let's get to it. There is a hard out at the end of the hour, but I know TJ Jefferson can do this because he's just as cool as the list. As he's about to do, and he's as cool as the other side of the pillow. It's time for TJ Jefferson's top five. Big ass grab bag. Hit it, TJ Jefferson. Go for it.
All right, kaboom. Guess who stepped in the room like we always do at this time? Fellas. We had the great Henry Winkler in our midst.
Yeah, we did.
Thanks to our fellows at home, I had a completely different idea for this top five, but I switched it up real quick.
Uh-oh.
And as I dug in the big ass grab bag, you know, in honor of Henry Winkler, I decided to pull out TJ's top five coolest TV characters. Now, I want you guys to understand how impossible this is, right? There are so many cool cats on television. It's really hard to narrow them down to five. But I did my best, and here we go. Coming in at number five, this guy lives on a 200-acre estate in a guest house in Hawaii. He's got an ill mustache. He drives a Ferrari. He gets all the chicks, and he solves cases.
That's a good one.
That's Magnum P.I.
How much more can
you be than Thomas Magnum, right? Like, this dude is just, you know, going around Hawaii. All the girls love him. He's good-looking. And, again, the mustache and the Ferrari.
The dimples. Don't forget the dimples.
You know, and it just Magnum. He was
short
cool.
Shorts.
And
a lot of thigh meat.
He even made Higgins look cool.
And you know, I'm opposed to that much thigh meat, but it was the 80s and it was Magnum, so of course he could get away with it. Coming at number four, Mike Del Tufo. You'd probably say that working in radio is one of the cooler jobs to have, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you work in radio, you got a great nickname, and you dress real fly. That puts you on my list. And this guy is, we're going to go to Cincinnati.
Venus?
WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yes.
Venus Flytrap.
Yes.
Come on,
Tim
man.
Tim Reed, everybody.
Tim Reed, the great Tim Reed. The name alone, Venus Flytrap, gets
one,
you
TJ.
On this list. And,
nice.
You know, and I would always do like my radio voice trying to be like Venus, but guess what?
Great.
You can't be like Venus
because
we're not that cool. All right. I'm doing this thing that Brockman hates, but once I say this, he'll get why I had to do it.
You're going
to
put two
because
people here?
How can you separate two guys who live in Miami, who dress like bosses,
and who
drive ill cars, and they solve cases?
I get it.
Crockett and Tubbs. Sonny Crockett, Ricardo Tubbs. Which, by the way, could have been number one on this list because the whole world in the 80s was dressing like these guys. I mean, look at these two. Philip Michael Thomas.
The cars. The
Don Johnson. The epitome of cool, right, Mike? Miami. The soundtrack. Who did the Don Henley? Was he the...
No. John Hammer.
Okay.
We got your back, TJ.
Yeah, we got you.
That's why I go to Del Tubo for this. All right, coming in at number two, right? This guy was mad cool. He was a former athlete. And then once his athletic career kind of went side, he decided he was going to head to a new vocation, which would keep him around people. And he wanted to make sure everybody knew his name whenever he was at his place of business. That's Ted Danson to Sam Malone.
Sam Malone. Yeah.
It's cool. Sam Malone from Cheers, man.
Sam
he owned his own bar. Again,
cool.
Good-looking guy. Got the girls. It just Cheers was the spot. It's where you wanted to be. It's
the
where
way
you
he
needed
would sashay to the tap.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, like he had like that sashay movie. He had like the Collinsworth slide down pat as he went to the tap.
Yeah.
You know?
Come on. And I can't even remember how good Sam Malone was at baseball. I'm pretty sure he was pretty good, right, before he got
average reliever, I think.
But hey, like the guy who gave up the home run of Velasquez last night. What else you got over there? What's number one?
Coming at number one, I usually like to try to put some type of drama or suspense to this. There ain't no drama. There ain't no suspense. He was right here. He had a black leather jacket. He could turn on a jukebox simply by punching it. He rolled with Pinky Tuscadero on the back of a motorcycle.
Tuscadero.
And he had the most famous thumbs up sign of all time. That's the legendary Henry Winkler. Winkler as Arthur the Fonz Fonzarelli. He was just in the building. By the way, this was the coolest MF on God's green earth. I'm telling you what, you couldn't tell 8-year-old me watching the reruns of Happy Days that the Fonz wasn't the man, and that is TJ's top five coolest TV characters
maybe
of all
time. Maybe the best
grab
bag to date.
Yeah. Well done.
Could be. It's a high bar to clear, but that I think it just cleared it.
Thank you.
Well done, sir.
Appreciate you.
And if we missed one, call us. 844-204-RICH.
And people on YouTube will definitely let me know. So
they will. See, even you, Brockman, couldn't be upset with Crockett and Tubbs. You can't break it up.
I couldn't.
Dreesen, the comedian, coming up.
See, I normally hate when he does, well, it's a top five, but I got like seven
people.
That was well done.
He gets very
Although mad. Adam just immediately texted us, no Zach Morris.
Well, here's a good one.
Come on, Zach Morris. Stop. What are you taking off that list for Zach Morris?
No Will Smith either.
By the way, okay, there's a good point. See, I as you guys know, I make a big list, and I chop them down. And what I did is I kind of eliminated
trust
all the high school and younger guys, because I could do like a Zach Morris, Theo Huxtable, they're on the list. Sure. Separate.
Plus, the 10-year ban also applies to the big-ass grab bag.
Bruce Willis, Moonlighting.
Well, yeah, too soon?
That's a hard one.
Pretty funny.
Too soon.
Bruce,
could you imagine if we did wait 10 years to put Will Smith back on?
So, yeah, that's why the younger people weren't on the list.
I mean,
Bruce Willis, Moonlighting.
Yeah, Bruce Willis
and Moonlighting was pretty cool. But you can't, like, I mean.
Hawkeye Pierce from MASH.
Hawkeye Pierce. Yeah.
And the one guy I almost had at number five, but I left Magnum, was Captain James T. Kirk.
Oh,
Captain
Kirk
was
cool. By the way, was always my favorite Kilborn lead-ins whenever he used William Shatner in his lead-in.
B.A. Baracus. If I had a top 10, all these people were on it, but of course I just had the five. So
that five was perfect, though. I cannot argue.
Venus Flytrap was an outstanding pull.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It was always a fan. I mean, just that name alone.
I wanted to be a radio DJ because of that show even more when I watched that show.
Because you also thought Lonnie Anderson was working in the front office as well.
That's exactly why.
And by the way, I could have put Johnny Fever and Venus, but I know I was doing two already and I didn't want to hear it. But Johnny Fever is another one. He could have been on the top 10, on the top five list. So many cool characters, man. It was hard. It was hard.
Bailey, by the way, was an underrated cast member of WKRP in Cincinnati.
That's, what's his name?
Yeah, Jan Smithers.
Yeah, Jan,
look, I'm just, I'm afflicted by this stuff. You could have gone Dr. Johnny Fever as well.
That's right, like I just said, but I didn't want to do the two again, so I left Crockett and Tubbs. Shout out to Fever.
Crockett and Tubbs.
Oh, wait, Horatio King.
I was going to say MacGyver.
Another MacGyver was on the last 10.
MacGyver was on the final 10.
Oh, Rockford, Jim Rockford.
Oh.
You know one of the coolest of all time.
I also had Dan Tanna.
Dan Tanna from Vegas.
Vegas.
Robert
on my 15. Yeah, like I said, this was a hard list to cut down, man.
Tyrion Lannister?
Tyrion? He was on the internet list. I couldn't put him on
the list. I'm looking at the list right now.
He's on it. Oh, got it. Well done. Great team. Great conversation.
For the real story behind some of wrestling's biggest moments, it's Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson, too.
All-time Hogan opponents, Macho Man's got to be in the conversation. Where's Andre for you?
I've always said Andre was number one.
Wow.
Because even going back before, you know, Hulk Hogan was a babyface, Hulk and Andre were able to go in and headline at the New Orleans Superdome, at Shea Stadium in Japan. Wherever they went, that was an attraction.
Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.